Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now, here's your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody.
So grateful for Paul and Nikki, the work they do to make this podcast sound so professional. Nikki does all the editing. Paul does the intros, outros, has been with me forever. So great to have this team of true professionals with us. We're so excited to have the mortgage professionals joining us around the nation. This is Monday, November 23rd, Thanksgiving week. And we're so grateful for you, our listeners. Again, this podcast is for you, mortgage professionals. And we're grateful that we have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. Our hot topic is Tom Showalter coming on. He's the founder and CEO of Candor FinTech. I'm so excited to have him come on. This is the fourth in a four-part series of podcasts dealing with technology, what we're doing and helping underwriters underwrite more loans. We're certainly paying them a lot more money, and many would say that's well-deserving. We're not going to argue with that, but now that you're making the extra money, we need to find a way to make them as effective and get our best return out of our investments. We've been doing a series of podcasts talking about underwriting technology. We've had some great podcasts. We had Joe Tyrell lead off the first week. Second week was Brent Chandler of Form Free. He did a great job. Then last week we had Frank Poison for Black Knight, and we've got Tom Showalter. So very excited to have him on. Tom was a rocket scientist in the aerospace technology industry, so we're going to be having some fun with that a little bit here, especially with Frank's comment last week about this isn't rocket science, it's worse. But anyway, more on that. Stay tuned to the second half. We're also proud to be a part of the industrysyndicate.com. Check it out, as well as Mortgage Media, two great places where you can listen to other great podcasts. Again, we promote podcasts everywhere. We're also pleased with our sponsors. Thank you, sponsors. Especially the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. On September 14th, we had Marina Walsh on talking about the profitability numbers and what's going on there. That was a great podcast. Also, a special thank you to Sinastra. Fusion Mortgage Bot Solution is just so powerful. We had Steve Hoke on August 24th talking about some of the things that Sinastra is doing, especially with data. Lenders One, we had Justin DeMoglia on back at June 1st. And then also, we've got the Mortgage Collaborative. We've got a pre-recorded podcast coming up here with Tom Gallucci. Mortgage Collaborative will be with us. Also, the Community Mortgage Lenders Association. We also had Michael Jones on September 21st of this year. Did a great job. Go back and listen to that podcast. Also, Indicom. So grateful for them as sponsors. We had on Linda Bomar. So grateful to have all of our sponsors here be with us. So thank you very much. Also, a special thank you goes out to Incelerate. A thank you to Josh Friend. He was on August 17th. Go back and listen to that podcast. Ainsworth Advisors. As listen to the updated podcast you'll find on the Ainsworth Advisory website. September 7th podcast. We had a good discussion on about that. Also, AI Assist. Go listen to Roman Venfield, the podcast we did in July 15th about how you can use AI to artificially go out and connect with borrowers. And it's on the marketing side. So very good stuff. Celebrity Home Loans, as well as Innovient. Check out what Ted Kramer and his team is doing for some of the top mortgage companies in getting the best pricing, being competitive in the marketplace. Also, Knowledge Group, Mobility, RE, Modix, Vilma, VendorServe, Vidyard. So grateful to have all of them. And we're also so grateful to have Alice, Alan, Matt here each and every week for the podcast. Let's get over to Rob Van Rathhorst with this week's MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
I'm Rob Van Rathhorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, FHFA issued a final rule establishing a revised capital framework for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Under the terms of the final framework, the GSEs would have to hold a combined $283 billion in capital, which is $20 billion more than under the proposed rule, in order to avoid limits on capital distributions or discretionary bonuses. MBA President and CEO Bob Rooksmith released a statement expressing our disappointment that FHFA did not adequately address several concerns we raised when the framework was reproposed. Going forward, MBA has called for FHFA to conduct a quantitative impact study to determine the full market impact of this rule. MBA will also continue to advocate for important market conduct reforms to be put in place prior to the GSE's eventual exit from conservatorship. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
Say a special thank you to all those at the MBA that do such a great job of helping our industry get to the right spot. They do their best, and I kid you not, they are so dedicated to our industry. Thanks, Rob. Appreciate you doing that MBA Mortgage Minute each and every week. Let's get over to this week's TM Spotlight with Les Parker on the macro view of the markets. Les?
From the very start, lock scheme down our hearts. Be a lasting part of never-ending shots. Will COVID last forever?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Do rates rise? The bears see economic resurgence continuing due to shorter hospital stays, more effective therapeutics, and now vaccines popping up everywhere throughout the developed world. Do rates fall? The bulls see Biden copying Europe's love affair with various forms of lockdowns despite the scientific evidence they are ineffective and create many disastrous consequences. Will shutdowns last forever? These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Appreciate the job they do on that. Yeah, this COVID stuff. For those of us who are healthy and taking this on, I just got the word from family members that I had a really dear friend pass away over the weekend from COVID. So I had a great uncle pass away here 2.5 weeks ago, and then over the weekend, another friend. So this is something to be taken seriously. You can't get that vaccine out fast enough, and it is definitely going to have an impact on the markets as we look forward to what the future holds. Oh, by the way, sign up for the Les Parker's TM Spotlight. And when you subscribe, put in the word power, as you will get the paid version for free. We've got Matt, who is founder and CEO of MBS Live, with his market update.
So, yeah, the 1.5 coupons, that's a fun story unto itself. A lot of times we talk about the curse of a new MBS coupon when we roll it out on MBS Live. And it's gotten to be a little bit of a running joke because of 2.5 coupons back in the day. It seemed like every time we'd add them to the MBS Live dashboard, then the bond market would lose ground. And so people started talking about 2.5 coupons being cursed. It wasn't a real thing, but more of an indication of bond market momentum, the natural propensity for bonds to correct a little bit after they've moved enough in a certain direction. But as you were just talking about, 2020 changed everything. COVID changed everything. Instantly created the need for 2.0 MBS coupons. And now we've gotten to 1.5. They have been trading for a couple months now behind the scenes, and then not even behind the scenes over the past month. But we wait to see enough liquidity and to make sure they're not going to lead our members astray when it comes to thinking about what rates are going to be doing intraday and what reprice risks might be. So they're now bona fide. They're liquid enough that they are a good thing to watch. If you have a jumpier lender that's quicker to reprice and a lender that offers rates that are in the mid twos, which, you know, most are right now. Anyway, down to business real quick. Last week, talked about the balance of two things. Hope versus fear. And it dovetails nicely into what you're saying about vaccines and also COVID being serious, is that we do have reasons for hope and the market knows it. And then there is a reason for fear because there is no telling exactly when the vaccine or whatever combination of vaccines or treatments will have whatever its beneficial effect that it's going to have on the economy sometime next year, likely. So we got to see how dark the dark times are between now and then and what type of economic impact that's going to have. We also got to see what type of permanent damage there's going to be. What jobs did we realize were dispensable all along that we only learned about because of the lockdowns? And this is a dance that will continue in the coming months. And it's hard to say if rates are going to ebb higher just because we're expecting things to eventually get better, or if bonds are going to pay more attention to the here and now. It's a tough call when you're trading something like a 10-year treasury yield or a mortgage bond that has a duration that spans both the dark times right now, but then what we would hope to be stronger times in the future. Anyway, markets were either trading the lockdowns or the ramp up was purely technical in nature. Either way, rates moved a little bit lower last week for 10-year yields, and MBS were very close to hitting all-time highs. And that brings up another really interesting observation about MBS and rates and rate surveys. Oh, my. So you hear and see these articles that talk about all-time low mortgage rates. I've probably written 47 of them in my day. And we've seen a lot of them since COVID. And the most recent ones were in bulk last week on Thursday. When you see a bunch of rate articles on Thursdays, you generally want to assume that is due to Freddie Mac's weekly rate survey. What a lot of people don't know about Freddie's weekly survey is that they send it out on Sunday or Monday, and most of the responses come in right when people get it. So most of those responses are going to be based on Monday's rates or late Friday's rate offerings, on who's answering the survey and how much, if they're even going to open Monday's rate sheets to look at it, or if they're just going to think about what they could have offered on Friday. What that means is that the number that's released on Thursday ends up being a week-over-week look at Monday's mortgage rates. And that means the survey doesn't capture all of the movement that happens in between that time. And so they're talking about all-time lows, but they're also talking about all-time lows for purchase rates. As we know, we have the adverse market, and that means that if we wait average rates for refis, actually not at all-time lows. So back to this notion of all-time high MBS prices. We didn't quite hit them last week, and I'm going to say the day that we did hit them, August 4th, was unsurprisingly the day that we actually had the best rate sheets in the history of the mortgage market. Now, it didn't last very long. It's only available for a couple hours on that day, but even for purchases, even if we're not talking about the adverse market fee, unless you have a lender that added incentives for purchase pricing, August 4th, you can still pat yourself on the back if you locked on that day. But otherwise, we're so close now to making it back to those all-time lows that you might as well flip a coin. We're right there. The other nice thing there is we have more room to improve based on margins. But I'm going to need to get the econ data here. The important bullet points would be that retail sales report coming in at 0.3 versus 0.5 forecast on Tuesday. Was also revised down from the previous month. The previous month was revised down from the previous reading. And then core retail sales, which takes out autos, gas, and building materials, was even lower compared to its forecast and also revised down. Markets seemed to react to that, which was nice to see some connection to economic data. And that goes back to that notion of needing to feel out the economic impacts of COVID in the short term before things give us more reason for hope. Builder confidence crushed its previous record and set a new record of 90. This includes housing boom time. So builders are more confident than they ever have been. If it's confusing to anybody why that wouldn't be reflected in housing starts, which also came out last week, the reason I say that is because housing starts aren't at an all-time high. It has everything to do with the fact that builders are building as fast as they frickin' can. There's no way to build any faster, and the numbers are lower in terms of the construction metrics simply because COVID makes things harder to do. Material costs are higher, and there's social distancing issues to work around, and I think that all speaks for itself. So builders are ecstatic. The new homes market couldn't be any stronger than it possibly is given the circumstances. Existing home sales crossed expectations, another 14-year high, third time in a row. So home sales numbers have utterly and completely defied expectations for where they would be at this time of year. We expected a big rebound after the initial plummet, but nothing that was remotely this big. Real quick, this week coming up is always an odd week for financial markets. It can go any way, and it isn't necessarily worth reading into any directionality that we see this week because it's often unwound in the following week. We can see volatility due to an absence of liquidity. And sometimes we can see things just go really flat and wait for the early December trading that tends to be a little bit more active, especially with the Fed meeting in mid-December now really making a change to their bond buying program. They're not going to end up buying more bonds, but they may tweak the duration goals, weighted average maturity, they call it, or WAM. And if they do that, it would be probably a little bit beneficial for longer-term rates, but it's hard to say. It depends on the details. We do have durable goods and GDP on Wednesday. Durable goods is a big market mover sometimes. GDP is just a revision of the last reading, so no big deal there. The biggest deal of the week, and maybe of the month or year for some clients, if people will be on Tuesday, tomorrow, when FHFA releases its home price data. That's the last piece of the pie when it comes to determining new conforming loan limits. So I've spent more time than I care to admit crunching numbers and playing with hypotheticals and looking at trends in home prices. And I'm by no means an expert, but I will say it looks very good for that new conforming limit being at least $550,000. Could be quite a bit higher, wouldn't be much lower. So that should be out tomorrow, shortly after the FHFA report in the morning.
Good heads up. We need to be paying attention to that number. That could have a big impact on what volumes are going to be. Absolutely. Incremental increase could have a big impact. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it so much. If you're wanting to check out MBS Live, be sure to go to the website, mbslive.net. And when you're in there, go put in LOL, look it on lending, initials, and you'll not be required to add a credit card, and you'll get an extended trial period. Matt, thank you so much for being here, friend. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave.
You bet. Good job. A lot of data today. All right, let's get over to Alice Alvey. Alice, CMB Vice President of Education and Training, Union Home Mortgage, Bill Cosgrove Mortgage and Company. You got this week's legislative update.
Oh, thank you. I know Bill would correct you on that because he's very good at all partners that we all make up Union Home Mortgage. But he's an amazing man to work for, very visionary, and just a great place to work. That being said, I do want to talk a little bit about everybody's favorite thing. Dave, this show's started and the legislative update really became a thing back in the Dodd-Frank days. We started this in the meltdown. Of course, I'm from Detroit, so we started melting down a couple of years before everybody else. So I always say 2005, but the rest of the country talks about 2007. In any case, this week, we actually had a case coming out of the ability to repay law, one of the ones we've been watching closely to see when would somebody actually sue in foreclosure because the bank didn't verify that they had the ability to repay. The first time this ran through the lower courts, they ruled in favor of the bank, so I didn't talk about it. But this time we've got the Sixth Circuit ruling against the bank. So I want to get this on everybody's radar. We think it's worth at least talking to your legal counsel about because particular case, the borrower had spousal income coming from a separation or divorce and then also had rental income. And the way it's worded, it's an off-the-wall kind of case where the divorce was verified, but the alimony payments weren't going to start until 2 months after closing. Now, most lenders who follow agency guidelines pretty well aren't going to let something lag 2 months. Maybe there's a 30-day lag if you're taking a risk, but most companies are going to say, I want verification of receipt, and I want to truly see it being received before closing. And then the second piece was rental income, that the tax returns showed rental income, not from the subject property, though, big mistake, and they didn't get a copy of the actual lease for the property, and they didn't verify actual lease payments coming in. And those are the caveats in the way this court ruled that I think are worth making sure our legal counsels don't think this could get stretched any farther, that legal decisions, sometimes other judges read them to the letter as far as how the case went, and other times it gets interpreted a little bit beyond the way it actually played out in that particular case. So I think our concern is, does this mean every single time I've got rental properties, I can't just solely rely on tax returns? I have to have a lease and I have to have proof of a lease payment to my borrower. That kind of takes it a little extra farther. And we've talked about this back when the law came in, underwriting versus legal reasons that I get certain documentation on a loan. So this was a portfolio bank, you know, what they did, so when the loan goes into default, then the borrower comes back saying, hey, it's not my fault. You guys shouldn't have given me the loan. So anyway, just wanted folks to be aware. It's worth taking a look at it. If you put in, it's Elliott versus First Federal Community Bank of Bucyrus, and I just made it through the Sixth District with the bank not coming out on the good side. So we'll watch that one for everybody, too. It looks like a good portfolio loan, perhaps, that just now the borrower's blaming us. You know how that goes.
Yep.
The only other point I just want to make sure for everyone is the agencies did change their self-employed guidelines. We have extra steps we have to go through for self-employed, and now you're going to need to get 3 months of bank statements, not just two, and that's going to go into effect for applications December 14th. So heads up on that. For those of you working with self-employed borrowers, it's hairy enough as it is, but you do want to make sure you're gearing your customers up that you're going to need that extra bank statement going forward. Some companies are implementing it now, but it's formally December 14th for applications. That's my update for today, Dave. I'll kick it back to you.
Very good. Got a question from one of our listeners just sent in to me. If you want to text me questions throughout the podcast, text them to 512-632-2900, 512-632-2900. We'll get them on the air, or you can send them to LinkedIn. So Alice, this person says, love Alice's update. One of the reasons I tune into this podcast, which I love, is because of the updates I get from Alice. How do you stay on top of all of this? I get concerned that we and our team are not doing the job, and we're grateful for what you do here. But I know there's so much more. So, Alice, how do you stay on top of everything?
You do a lot of reading, and then you have to have a discipline. I'll tell you what, the greatest discipline I have is preparing for this radio show, right? So it forces me to go check the Federal Register, check the MBA NewsLink, has the advisory action information on it. So that'll give you what MBA is paying attention to. Then I do get headlines from other agency news publications, the Dodd-Frank report and many others. There's many good national mortgage news. So you just watch their headlines, and then you have to go do the research. And the other thing I'll say that's super important that we do is we have a weekly meeting with all departments. So it's our policy group, sales is involved, ops, everybody's there representing processing and underwriting. And everybody has ownership over certain areas of agency updates. So you have to have multiple people who are responsible. You can't just make it one person. Certainly your risk manager is ultimately accountable, but make lots of people accountable. Schedule a regular time that you'll go through it so you can all talk about it. Keep minutes so you don't forget. We have extensive trackers so that we keep track of each of the memos and that we're not losing track of things. You have to go do the research.
It helps being on the podcast because it does force you to do some of those things. They wrote back, just said, yep. They said, I never met Alice Alvey. Can't wait to do that. She is so valuable to us here. So thank you for the work you do on all the research, Alice, because it's much appreciated. You've got fans.
I can't wait till we can all get back in person soon, right? Yeah, let's plan for summer. We'll all plan on an event in the summer and we'll get together.
Yeah, hopefully that'll be by then, Alice. Appreciate it. Alan Pollock is here also with another weekly tech update, another popular guy with our listeners. Alan, what you got, friend?
Good afternoon. As you would always say, David, TGIM. Thank God it's Monday. It's funny that Alice, you said that, right? So there is a discipline you need to be ready each week. And it's on your mind all week long, thinking about what are you going to talk about or what are you going to have ready that next coming week. Sometimes it goes to plan and sometimes it doesn't. And I have Google Alerts set up to send me different messages and certain keywords I search for. And like Alice said, it just forces you to stay up to date and you know what's going on all the time.
Definitely.
I'll try to make you laugh today. Yeah. I heard this statement. So we're going to talk about QA today and some news, but it is, you won't get hungry unless you take a lick. So that's my teaser into the QA section. Take a lick. QA is the topic, and we're going to get there in a second. But you won't get hungry unless you take a lick. I was looking through in my discipline some stuff, and I found this from a couple of years ago. 75% of millennials, people born between 1980 and 2000, I know we think a lot of other people are millennials as well, prefer to go to the dentist rather than to their bank. And that's music to ears for fintech companies. So I start off with this question today. Are you a digital lender? And what does that mean to you? And if the fintech companies, if a lot of you are considering yourselves a true fintech lender, then you should be excited about that statement from many years ago where millennials would rather go to the dentist than to their bank. And if you're a bank, you better be working on your fintech. So anyways, I thought that was very interesting to start the day off. A couple of quick things in the news, David. Quantarium, that's the name, Quantarium. They announced a partnership with a company called Valigent. I'm not sure which way to pronounce it, Technologies. It's basically a brand new collateral valuation model, and they're using all this funky AI and tech. They actually said evolutionary programming, neural networks, genetic modeling, mimicking biological processes for the most accurate results. So that's the best press release I've ever heard. But anyways, they have all kinds of stuff. They go down to the zip code county level. They look at all kinds of valuation, and they come up with what they call QVM insights. If you're looking to integrate with someone or check it out, you want to, it sounds very interesting. TransUnion. So we're talking about moving underwriting along, right? Some unbelievable people we're going to be chatting with today from Candor FinTech. TransUnion just released their income and employment verification platform, very similar to Equifax. And they say that they launched it in collaboration with one of the leading payroll providers in the U.S. And it has tens of millions of active employment records updated every month, as we would expect. I'm sure that will continue to expand, especially with the high demand that I don't see slowing down anytime soon. By the way, Form Free, which we had on, was it last week or the week prior? IndyComms has partnered with them, get this, with their ability to pay business health check, meaning that if you have a self-employed borrower, they have the ability to take a look at business and expense streams, all that great data, put it all together, use their Income Genius product, and voila, you have an approved borrower.
A little piece of trivia. Who created the Income Genius?
Tell me. Exciting. Who?
Alice Alvey. Yes.
No way.
Yes. Rachel Harris and, of course, our wonderful tech team over at IndyComm. As a team, yes, we built that. I was definitely part of the project team and helping with the business rules.
If Alice couldn't prove to be any more dynamic, she is now the fintech Alice Alvey. So that's awesome, Alice.
Isn't that cool? Yeah, I had to give that a little shout out because I know she was smiling.
That's great. Very cool. Equifax also has released on their work number product, which is income and employment, the fact that now they call it Mortgage Duo, and you now can do instant verifications on co-applicants. That's really important as we have more applications and we're trying to get things done faster. It saves more time. It's a more streamlined process. So you want to make sure that you're looking at that if you're an Equifax user. Quick reminder on last week, we talked about the process of finishing off 2020, preparing for 2021. And remember, it was the Moscow method. It was must have requirements that you must have, should have requirements that you should have, but not important to deliver right away. Could have are things that are desirable, but not necessary. And the things that sales and all the CEOs, the people listening to this podcast sometimes just run to their team saying, I must have, that's what we call won't have. They're desirable, they're great, but they have not been agreed to by stakeholders or the things that are thrown over the fence. Everybody's got lots of won't haves. But I did promise that we'd talk about QA. And really what's really important, there's an acronym we talked about almost a year ago, David, it's HDIMADPWS. And I'll test you on that next week. It's called How Do I Manage and Plan Tech Projects with Success? And really, it's making sure that you have QA. Even if you're not building the technology, you got to have that. And today, sales teams are beta testers. QA engineers are given a seat at the table in the requirements phase, right? They're no longer an afterthought. Everything's in the eye of the customer, right? You have one shot to make a best first impression, and you want to make your customers happy, as well as your originators, right? They're your customers. We talked about that. What's really important is making sure that you have QA defined and part of the process definition. You have them part of the implementation. That means in the meetings with your vendors. That means planning your workflow, making sure that they understand and they ask the right questions. And the more involved you get that QA team, the more a part of the entire process they will become. They are the gatekeeper to you allowing releases to go out to your customers, your users, your LOs, and your borrowers. And even more important, if you're not building technology, but you have all your vendors you're working with, if you said to me, hey, should I go get a project manager or should I get a QA manager? I'm going to tell you to get both. And if you have a project manager and you're looking for the next, get a QA. You need somebody that can manage and build that infrastructure of knowledge of how your systems work. You can't rely on your loan officers and your borrowers to be testers. So it's a topic we can go on forever and ever about. There's technology to automate it. There's processes, ways to make QA really easy, but it is so critical and important when we're going to be digital, like we talked about earlier today, right? So if you think about that, don't forget about QA. And with that, David, that's the report for this week. Looking forward to our Candor FinTech conversation.
Yes, I am too. Thank you, Alan. Appreciate you being here each and every week with an update. Very good. Excellent. So we're going to get right into the Hot Topic segment right now. Folks, so good to have you joining us for the Hot Topics segment for the week of November 23rd. So good to have as our special guest, a special, really interesting guy. He's a rocket scientist. And before we go and introduce you to Tom Showalter, I want to give a shout out to Brandy Young, who reached out to me when she heard we were doing these segments. Again, we're doing, this is the fourth in a four-part series on underwriting and underwriting technology. What's going on in the fintech world to help underwriters? We're paying them more money. As I said at the beginning of the regular podcast, we are paying them more money. We need to get more productivity out of them. And underwriters should be happy about this and get back to what they used to do and the volumes they used to do. We need technology to help them. Brandy was listening to that, reached out to me. She said, Dave, you got to have Tom on. And I've listened to Tom speak at conferences. So it's a real honor to have joining us today, Tom Showalter, founder and CEO of Candor FinTech, a true rocket scientist. Tom, good to have you here.
Well, good afternoon. Thank you for having us.
A real pleasure. And you also have a notable career. You are a digital risk CoreLogic First American. You've got a notable career already in the mortgage industry beyond that. And I'm particularly interested in the comment that Frank said last week. He was working with a rocket scientist. If you'll go to those that listen to the podcast, hey, for those of you who say this is not rocket science, implying that it's not as bad, he says it's worse. It's even more difficult than rocket scientists. So, Tom, so good to have you on the podcast. We could go on and on about
your background.
But I've heard people to check out in the show notes your full background and get to know you. You are an eloquent speaker. You speak at a lot of conferences. I'm really just honored to have you here.
Yes,
in the past, some interesting discussions around what you think is a real bottleneck in underwriting and how to solve that. Mm-hmm. Can you bring some of the real improvements to lending? And then talk a little bit about the bottleneck and what you've been seeing. You're an expert. Really want to get your perspective on that.
Sure. Thank you so much for having us. And this is an excellent question. When we were founding Candor, we really wanted to target something that had true economic significance and would have process value for the average mortgage maker. And we identified opportunities in the back office space. This is where the bottlenecks were occurring. And we took a hard look at the bottleneck in the back office space. And we found out, based upon our analysis, it was the dependence upon the critical thinking of the underwriter that was the bottleneck. You couldn't really get around. You couldn't move a loan downstream. You couldn't get it across the goal line unless you applied underwriter critical thinking to the loan. And so it's this reliance upon critical thinking that is the true bottleneck to creating a fast and efficient underwriting process. And it's our assertion that to really revolutionize the economics of lending, we really had to model the critical thinking of an underwriter. We must teach a computer to think critically, and we must teach a machine to react as an underwriter would. This was not easy, as you might guess. When we got into it, and as we took a hard look at it, we realized that some loans require a little critical thought to fund, and others require a great deal, but all loans require some. And so, therefore, we had to have a path to successfully underwriting and funding a loan. We found that to be volatile and prone to change. So this new technology had to have some dynamic nature to it. As new data arrives, the complexion of the loan will change. And as new investor guidelines are encountered, the complexion also changes. So it's the job of the underwriter to assess and reassess the loan in this dynamic, fast-changing environment and to adapt accordingly in order to successfully underwrite and fund a high-quality loan. And this is no small task. No two loans are alike. Each loan is unique. The path to a successful underwrite is complex and dynamic, and that is why underwriters are so well paid. And until now, only a bright, adaptable, insightful, and experienced person could perform the underwrite successfully. We believe Candor has changed that.
That's
at Candor,
good.
We have a successfully modeled underwriter thought life and institutionalized that in a computer with what's called expert system technology. This was not easy, as I mentioned. Candor has absorbed over 2 years in its design, another 3 years in development, and at least 18 months in customer development and test. Back to your previous guest comment about QA, we did a lot of it. Today, Candor runs over 1 million lines of code, and in the months of August, September, October, and November, Candor has processed over 70,000 live loans. The economic benefit to our clients has been enormous, and we partnered with some great lenders, so these folks have done their share of the heavy lifting. Cycle times from application to funding have been reduced by 20.6 days for every loan that Candor touched. Pull-through rates have increased 18.1%, borrower satisfaction has increased by 11%, and over 50% of these loans, over 36,000 of them, absorbed no underwriter labor at all. Our clients were amazed, and we were grateful for the opportunity. That's the story of the bottleneck.
That's so interesting. Well, also, I understand about AI, it is a learning. It's constantly learning. The fact that you've run 70,000 live loans and that you've had 36,789 not require any underwriter labor, that is pretty amazing. And at the core of this thing you just referenced. It's called expert system. And how does this replicate thinking, and how can we have confidence in it? Sounds pretty futuristic.
It is futuristic in a way, but expert systems have been around for some time. An expert system, what its job is, it models the thinking of a subject matter expert. It does this using a methodology called knowledge engineering, depicts the expert's thinking to best represent how he or she organizes and analyzes a problem. This kind of thinking cannot be modeled by simple if-then statements. It's more complex than that. I have below an example of a medical diagnostic system to give you a feel for how expert system technology employs its critical thinking to diagnose a patient. So a medical diagnostic expert system has modeled the thought life of a doctor who is a trained diagnostician. It contains two sources of information,
This is part of modeling how the expert thinks about the problem. One source of information is the library of diseases and their symptoms. It also contains a second source of information, which is data to represent the patient's symptoms. As you might imagine, this kind of expert system must adapt constantly to new information. Patient symptoms change all the time, and therefore it must adapt. When this software achieves a state where the symptoms are consistent with a specific disease, the system has reached a diagnosis. And this is not unlike what underwriting a mortgage looks like. When Candor models the thought life of an underwriter, it considers three sources of information, not just two. In Candor, underwriter thought life is represented by the interaction of the 1003 data, that's the loan application, and Candor acquires this information by integrating directly with your LOS. The second source of information is third-party data about the borrower and the property, e.g. pay stubs, appraisals, form free information, and so forth. And Candor gets this information from many sources, OCR key documents, and XML data feed from third-party data vendors, form free again. And the third source is the investor guidelines, the representation of the type of loan the investor will buy. And these guidelines are resident in Candor's database, and they're supplied by Candor's clients, and we access their investor guidelines. So these three sources of information interact, and the interaction of these three sources, when it's completely consistent, meaning the data about the borrower, the data the borrower has represented as his official statement in the 1003, and the requirements in the investor guidelines, when those three are consistent, you really have a loan that can be underwritten, and it's ready to close. However, the path to that level of consistency is very hard. It's complex, volatile, and often fraught with inconsistencies, and they are often unique to that loan. So Candor had to invent a new technology to address this phenomenon. It's called Cognitech.
Cognitech. Now, that's another new word we got. I want to go back to one question on the guidelines thing, because that is always a big challenge for so many people, is to what Ellie Mae bought, AllRegs, how does your system access the underwriting guidelines?
Sure. If you were a client and you signed up with Candor, we'd ask you for the list of investors that you'd like to sell your loans to. And then we would get from that list of investors the contact points so that we could get a download of all the relevant investor guidelines. And we also get put on the update methodology so that when that investor number three, issues a change to guideline number 37, we're informed, and then we can update the Candor database with the new guide.
But you touched on Cognitech. I love that term. What does it do, and how is it different than, say, artificial underwriting, AU?
Okay, sure. Yeah, so Cognitech is the technology that enables Candor to adapt in real time to a dynamic and complex problem. Cognitech enables Candor to respond quickly to new information with the most appropriate next step. As an example, when Cognitech determines that the income represented by a pay stub is not consistent with the income stated on the 1003, it launches a process to resolve this inconsistency. It may, in this case, ask the lender to correct the income on the 1003. However, if the correction then leaves the borrower unable to meet the investor's income requirements, it may ask for additional sources of income. And if they're not forthcoming, Candor will suspend the loan. However, if the borrower can supply another valid source of income, Candor can then clear the condition and move on. So what the Cognitech is doing is taking a look at all the inbound information and reassessing the current state of the loan. Is this something new and different? And if so, what's the next best step that Candor must take in order to fully underwrite this loan? So that's the dynamic part of Cognitech. Now, in terms of Candor, fundamentally differs from an AUS. The AUS only uses a subset of the information processed by Candor. An AUS focuses upon 1003 information and the investor guidelines, namely Fannie Freddie. It ignores the data from third-party data providers, and the AUS has no means to vet and validate the information from third-party sources. As a result, the AUS has no logical capability to issue and clear conditions with any authority. By using only two legs of the stool, an AUS consistently presents a list of conditions that are inconsistent with the third-party data. Hence, the need for Candor will issue and clear conditions in order to identify and resolve any inconsistencies across the three sources of information. This is a form of intelligence that's unique to Candor. It was immensely difficult to build, very complex. Only an expert system that incorporates Cognitech can actually conduct a complete underwrite, given the nature of an underwriting problem, which is dynamic, fast-paced, changing new data all the time. So that's Cognitech. Hope it makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It's fascinating. How does aerospace technology play a role in something like this?
We were selective in the aerospace technology, but we chose some stuff that's very relevant. When we were challenging ourselves to come up with a way to automate the underwriting process, to really automate the critical thinking we realized that we couldn't automate the critical thinking unless we also found a way to make sure that we were making an effective defect-free loan every time. Yeah. And that's hard to do.
And there's so many potential defects that are potential in this. And that's the part that's just got to be unnerving.
Yes, it is. And one of the things that we found out was that aerospace technology has a methodology, a technology designed to basically make the defect-free stuff. So if you think about what an aerospace system has to do, like, for example, in a commercial airliner, there's over 1 million interacting parts that perform perfectly every time. That's not an accident. The aerospace industry had to develop a science to basically make sure that the systems would all perform flawlessly all the time. Lives depend on it, and if you're flying commercially, your life depends on it. So what we did was we took the science of system safety engineering from the aerospace world and brought it over to Candor, where its job is to make defect-free loans. So the same technology that would land your aircraft safely will now land your loan safely. But that's what it does. It sits there, and it enables you to sit there and determine what the quality of the loan is going to be as you're making it. You no longer have to wait. You no longer have to sit there and make the loan, then subject it to a manual QC, and then determine what the quality was. You will know what the quality is at the time you make it. And so in that process, Candor has gone through a huge number of corroborations. For example, we check name and address across multiple sources. We check net pay on the pay stub and cross-reference it with ACH on the borrower's bank statement. We detect undisclosed self-employment. We also corroborate an asset balance listed on the 1003, et cetera. We do this with every loan. In fact, probably the number of cross-checks and validations that Candor performs on every loan is in excess of 10,000. So it's very rigorous. And this is something only a system could really do. You couldn't ask an underwriter to do 10,000 cross-checks, but you can ask a machine to do that, especially if all the data are there. Now, Candor is so confident in this approach to defect estimation and resolution that it ensures its work with a loan defect policy from a major underwriter. So there's a lot of work that went into making sure that when we say the loan has extremely low rate of defect, that we can prove.
And you literally put an insurance policy behind it. That's very impressive. You look at the bigger picture, a lender's dream could be coming true with what you're saying. It sounds very promising. Can you give me a bigger picture of the roadmap for Candor? What are some of the things you have coming up?
Sure. First of all, the current roadmap, we're obviously rolling out the productivity tool, the thing we've been talking about that models the underwriter's critical thought life and institutionalize that in a machine and uses that to basically automate a significant portion of the underwriting problem. But as we're doing that, we also have Candor. Candor's designed to write all its information to a blockchain, and therefore that provides this indelible record of the underwrite. So what Candor's been able to do is cataloging data about how the loan was made, how many income sources were needed, how long it took to verify, how much of a challenge it was to get a particular loan funded, and so forth. All of that's in the Candor database. So what we offer our clients going forward is not only a productivity tool, but a data source about how they manufactured the loan so that they can use that to improve their manufacturing processes. And so they really love the part where they can go back and see empirically how long something took, the different nature of the underwrite, and how all of that has been compiled and analyzed and verified. So they have all of that in the Candor database, and that's one of the services we offer as they go forward. But as we go forward further with the data part, we also get into what the aerospace folks love, and that's the analytics part. And so what we've done is really introduced aerospace precision to the mortgage space in terms of mortgage manufacturing. And we leverage data and analytics to predict future outcomes in real time. Mentioned a minute ago about loan quality. We do that now. But funding and pull-through, we'll be able to start predicting what loans will be funded and how the likelihood of proof pull-through has been affected. And then, of course, month-end financials. We will be able to start talking about midway through the month what the end of month's going to look like and why and how many of these loans are going to fund and what kind of profit margins you're looking at. We go from the productivity tool to the data to the analytics here as we evolve.
I'm going to toss the mic to Alice and get a couple questions from you.
Oh, thanks, Dave. My question was something that you had mentioned earlier. Is this borrower-facing just the way that you described it earlier?
You're spot on. First of all, presently it's underwriter-facing or loan processor-facing, perhaps even loan officer-facing. But the structure can be borrower-facing, and some of our clients want to move that direction. So that's all true.
Very good.
Okay, that was interesting. Yeah.
Alan, you know this space so well, and Tom, we both have listened to him speak numerous times. Any questions you have for him?
Yeah, God, if we had another hour, could really ask some good questions. But the one that really sticks in my mind right now, Tom, is there's so many bottlenecks in the process. And even when people use technology in underwriting, there's still bottlenecks. So maybe just talk about the bottlenecks, right? How do you really eliminate bottlenecks?
Well, sure. I'll take you back to an interview that we did with one of our current customers when we talked to them about what they wanted an underwriting system to do and what kind of philosophy they wanted to pursue. So there were two paths. Path number one was we want to present the underwriter with all the analyses and all the data and all the conditioning and everything that the engine was deciding and get the underwriter to review and approve. But at a very detailed level, the underwriter had to understand what was going on and get involved with all the presentations going forward and also all the data and all the analysis as the system went about rendering a recommended approach. Let's call that Path A. Path Bravo was the system does all of this in the background, and the underwriter sits there as a surveyor of the progress on a loan and looks at the outcomes, namely the conditions that are still outstanding to clear that the underwriter has to address, those that have been cleared by the machine, and therefore trusting in the machine that it's done the proper analyses and so forth so that they could move the loan forward faster. So this executive really wanted Plan B. And the reason why she said it was very simple. She said, if I have my underwriters sitting there looking at all the data, sitting there looking at all the analyses, and sitting there rethinking all the things the system has done, I'm really not going to remove any labor. I'm really not going to accelerate the thinking, nor have I changed the underwriter's job to be a higher level job. He still has the same very granular job he had before. So this executive's vision was to basically identify and rely upon the machine and then send the information to the appropriate person in the process so they could, if any approval was necessary and a review was necessary, that they could sit there and exercise their authority, fully informed about a very specific item. So the bottlenecks were really, A, do you want to present the underwriter with huge amounts of information that they then have to review, or do you want to present them with an overview of a process and how it's been processed and concluded and get their endorsement going forward? So Plan B was the one that we followed. Plan B is also the one that resulted in the tremendous economic benefit you heard about at the start of my presentation.
Alan, anything else?
Yeah, the one thing I do want to say is I want to commend you on having those analytics and statistics up front. And obviously you're a rocket scientist because you said Bravo instead of A and B. But no, those are real statistics that you're getting from real loans. Do you have a target? Where would you like to be? Knowing you can only do so much, right? Because other things need to evolve. Like you can't process all digital data unless the lender is using a digital. So where are you hoping? You're hoping to get to 50%? What are you looking at?
First of all, we have a very robust OCR optical character recognition component to handle PDFs and other kinds of documents that are scanned and faxed in. So we have that dimension of our data gathering, as well as any form of XML where we get something like a form-free bank statement in over the transom and it goes directly to data form. So we have those two. I think, first of all, let me comment on something. The economic benefit that we enjoyed that I described at the outset, not that we weren't expecting it, but we were not expecting to have that big an impact so early in our life. We're probably at year three to the economic impact we were hoping to create, which speaks to two things. First of all, the viability of our solution. And secondly, the quality of our initial customers. These folks have been great because they figured out how to use it. They figured out how to employ this capability called Candor and to use it in very innovative ways. And so it's been a two-pronged effort. So the economic benefit that we're enjoying today, we weren't expecting to be able to offer people for another couple of years. The fact that it's here now is as much a credit to our clients as it is to us. So we thank them. But the next part is where are we expecting to go? Well, obviously, we have the normal roadmap things like, okay, we now do conventional conforming. We also have FHA programmed and ready to go. Right. Then after that, we'll do VA, jumbo, non-QM. And we also have people lined up, clients to go test and verify all of that as we roll it out. So you'll get that in the Q1 and Q2 of 2021. Those are the rudimentary things. You got to do them. That's the business. But as we go forward, we're also looking to improve the data arm of our business model and the analytics arm of our business model. And we're also seeking to give our customers more of a facility so that they could figure out better how to improve their manufacturing process. So, for example, in Candor, there's something called a smart code. And that tells you for every condition what a source was and what it means and why you need it. So some of our clients are starting to take the smart codes and build a matrix that says, if we see this smart code, we got to send it to this person because this is the most efficient, appropriate person to process this problem for a loan. And so getting to that smart code-driven manufacturing process, which will, again, decrease the cycle time, increase the productivity, increase the throughput, all of those things will happen. And that's like our next major innovation, is to go from the current level of economic impact to a smart code-driven impact that will have even more impact, we believe.
Just give us a little bit of an idea of customers you have. Don't name anybody if you don't want to, but you've been around for a while. It's not new.
We have a very robust marketing effort. We are boarding approximately 3 clients a week, planning to increase that to 4 to 5 a week, and then eventually 8. And our current boarding process takes no more than 30 days. So we've managed to figure out how to make the presentation of Candor and the joining of it with a lender's process to be very efficient, easy, straightforward. And so we're able to do a board now in 30 days and eventually probably down to 10 or 15 days per client. So we're looking forward to that. So that's where we are with.
Excellent. That's amazing. Is there anything else that we should be thinking about as we wrap this up?
The only thing I would offer, this is not my first expert system. This is more like my fourth. We didn't really have to do a dramatic amount of rewrite, re-engineering, redesign work. We just didn't. That's not the norm with expert systems. That's the unusual path. So we've been very fortunate in being able to get a robust solution out quickly without having to rewrite it and redesign it. So that's been one of the things that we've really benefited from. Another thing, I think we really hit on something when we talked about underwriting, the underwriter's critical thinking and modeling that as being our target. That seems to have released the economic engine here and unleashed it, enabled it to perform. And then Candor's unique. It's a very unique piece of software, and it has many components, and you got to really have them all. You need the expert system, you need the knowledge engineering, you need the Cognitech, you need the system safety engineering. All those things are needed to give a really robust solution. And if you don't, if you shortchange any of those, our estimate is you'll probably have a problem. So those are just a few thoughts that I have. But again, we're very fortunate that our initial vision was upheld, that we didn't have to redo it, which you can imagine not only the challenge of having to do that, but then going to the investors and saying, you know, it didn't work as well as we thought. We need more money. Please send the checks here. That tends to be not a very fun conversation. So we've avoided that one as well. So we've been very fortunate and we have great clients and they've been a great contributor to making us a success so far.
You've done a great job. I love the forward thinking that you have. And I'm not sure I'm hearing other people doing it. One of the things I did hear that you talked about is blockchain. Brent Chandler at FormFree was talking about how blockchain is going to be playing a bigger part of it. So kudos to you. I just wish you the continued success, Tom. You're doing an outstanding job. We desperately need this. And let us know if there's any new developments as you continue along the way. We'd love to have you back on. Again, kudos to Brandy for calling me and making sure we got you included in this series of podcasts. So I'm really grateful for your time today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You bet. We've had as our special guest, Tom Showalter, founder and CEO of Candor. You got to check out this system. If you have not taken a look and considered how it can help you and your underwriters become more productive, be sure to check out their website. Next week, we're going to have Cindy Danko on with Fannie Mae. Very excited. We recorded this interview with Cindy late last week, and it was really good. You're going to enjoy what all that Fannie Mae has done. The thought that's gone into the forbearance program, everything related to how to respond to the pandemic. It's really been really interesting. Special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, Community Mortgage Lenders Association, Indicom, Accelerate, Ainsworth Advisors, Mobility, Finastra, Modex, all these companies. Check out all of our sponsors on our sponsorship page. Thank you so much. Have a great week, everybody. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.